Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome to, we can officially say it since Shelton's not here, the best night of the week. Allie Peek, Dave Waters. You'll notice it's only two screens tonight. That's because, you know, Shelton was rude and went on vacation with his family. But don't worry, we're here to do the heavy lifting. Dave, how you doing?
Doing well. We'll manage it without Shelton tonight. Good for him. A well-deserved day off, of course. But we got this covered. We got still a lot to talk about. Gator Nation still buzzing with offensive line recruiting and all that stuff. But there's plenty to get into, and certainly ready for another episode right here of Gator Summit. And hey, we are certainly brought to you by Prize Picks, everybody. So more about them later on.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned offensive line, and I am really excited about Peyton Miller. He committed earlier in the week. Was this Monday?
Monday, yeah.
All of these days are running together at this point. Peyton Miller committed on Monday. This was a really big pickup, the number one center in the 2027 class. And, you know, I had a chance to talk with him a little bit, and he is a really cerebral kid, highly intelligent. I asked him to describe his game in three words for people that hadn't seen his film. And he told me nasty, smart, and leader. And I don't know about you, Dave, but if I was going to ask my future center to describe their game in three words, could you have picked a better three words?
Nope. And for me, when I look, like, of course, Florida would get a commit. I'll go to huddle and I'll look at highlights and stuff.
Sure.
And first, for that position, the first word I'm looking for is nasty.
Absolutely. So, you know,
we can work on the smarts and everything else later. I want somebody who's just going to tear the opposing defensive line's head off. And I'm certainly glad to hear that. He didn't want to play it, you know, safe or anything like that. I'm going to go play ugly. I'm going to play physical. I'm going to, you know, go destroy the guy opposite of me. So certainly when I'm looking at a center, that's exactly what I want to hear. But yeah, you're right. Even the rest of it too. Yeah. And look, you are, in some ways, the leader of that offensive line group would be in the center, and you are in tandem with the quarterback as well. Mm-hmm. So I want to hear everything that he described himself as. That's exactly what we want to hear as Gator fans, any college football fan. That's what you want to hear from your future center.
Yeah, I mean, I think so. And, you know, this, you and I have talked about this over the last week or so, but this is so far the most impressive offensive line recruiting class that Florida has put together in, you know, what were we saying, 2012 at the very, you know, most recent. And I think because there's still plenty of time, it could even get more impressive than that. But talk to me a little bit about what Phil Troutwine has been able to do in his short amount of time as the offensive line coach at Florida. Like, we were under the impression it was hard to recruit offensive linemen to UF. So maybe it's not?
Yeah. You know, there's so many angles, I think, to go with this, Allie, about the Phil Troutwine angle to this is – first of all, it is a lot to do with him. I mean, from when Maxwell Hiller committed to Peyton Miller to a lot of the targets that are left on the board, it is because of Phil Troutwine. It is because of that relationship he built. And some of these guys, well, most of these guys so far from the Northeast, where he had a lot of connections, where he's from, where he played.
The guys he had offered at Penn State.
Right, where he coached at Penn State. So he had a lot there. But, you know, Peyton Miller's dad even mentioned it in the interview. It was like, hey, this developmental track record as well goes a long way with him putting guys in the NFL. The mom made a connection with him because of how strict he is on his own nutrition diet, and she's a nutritionist, so they got kind of connected there. So there's just so many relationships to the Phil Troutwine angle, you know, on the field, off the field, with the parents, with the head coach, John Sumrall, as well, with bringing Phil Troutwine in and kind of trusting Urban Meyer's word and everybody else's word about Phil Troutwine. I mean, it's hard to say he's the only reason Florida's in this, because a lot of these recruits are also mentioning John Sumrall when they met him. Maybe he's kind of the final nail in the coffin. But Florida's not in this situation without Phil Troutwine.
I asked Peyton Miller, I said, would you be committed to Florida if Phil Troutwine was not the offensive line coach? And he told me no. He actually said he wasn't sure he'd even have an offer from Florida, which when my husband listened to that, he was like, wait, the number one center in the country doesn't think he would have had an offer from Florida? Like, that's a problem. But
it's not surprising.
Of course. And, you know, I think the 1-2 punch of Phil and Sumrall is so effective here because Phil is an incredible developer. He's got a track record. You can look and see guys he recruited that were 5 stars that made it in the NFL, guys that were no stars that made it in the NFL. Like, he is just developing regardless of your starting point when you come in. But everybody talks about how Sumrall is so normal, so approachable, just such a guy's guy. And I think the combination of that is where the success is coming from.
Yeah, I talked about that on Gator's Breakdown earlier this week too. It's, you know, you don't have this head coach that's sitting in an ivory tower.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is a guy who we've been around him personally, us, you know, in a group setting. We've had him on our podcast, and it's just, we see that as well, and we're glad. I think the recruits are noticing. It seems like the players are noticing as well. So I think it goes a long way with this, and I think a lot of this really is the word relationships. In this crazy NIL world of college football, college sports in general, look, a lot of times the money is going to be equal in a lot of places. Yeah. So the relationships are still going
to matter.
They're still going to matter. And let's take it one step further. Maxwell Hiller in that relationship. I mean, Peyton Miller maybe commits to Florida anyway, but Maxwell Hiller's already in the class. He wanted to get a relationship with him. He reached out to him early.
Yeah.
So Florida really attacked this relationship angle with Peyton Miller.
And I think they still are, because he told me that he is going after Von Brandt. He like named three or four guys that he texts almost daily and tells them, hey, you should be a part of this class too. We want to have the best offensive line class that Florida has ever signed. And they're going after guys that are going to go after guys. And I love that. I feel like they are building something special. They're kind of bringing them into the circle. They're not just signing you. They're like, all right, you're a part of the family. Let's grow. Who else can you help us bring in?
Yeah. And I think, you've had Peyton on your show. I know he's been on with Shelton and Hightop. Yeah. He followed me on X. His dad followed him on X. You can tell they are invested in being Gators right now. And they're putting themselves out there for Gator Nation. I mean, there's been back and forth and, you know, sharing of the memes, the funny memes. Like, they're really, embracing
the crazy.
Yeah, already early on. So that's good to see, too. And so it was funny. On Three, I don't know if you saw this or not, Pete Nekos put out an article today.
I did not see this.
Yeah, it was really, really – I think the timing was perfect for Florida fans. It was talking to so many SEC GMs and Big Ten GMs and how NIL is playing a huge, huge factor in this cycle of college football right now. And I think for Florida to go to Texas, and Texas Tech's right there, you know, we know about them throwing NIL money around like crazy. Texas, you know, and Austin right there in state as well. And Florida won this battle. And Miller was saying, you know, staying in Texas was not a must. It was more about fit, not geography. Yeah. So this is the fit that we're talking about. You know, and there's so many angles to the relationship that make this a good fit for him. And his family liked it as well. So he wanted to make it easy for them to get to games. So Gainesville was a great easy place to get to. So Allie, one part of the article this was revenue sharing and talking about this crazy landscape. The floor for a Power Four roster budget in 2026, this is just a floor now, for Power Four, 15 mil. And the ceiling is pushing 50 mil, like we kind of know.
Yeah.
So, you know, the money's going to be an angle of it. You know, let's not
dig sure. It's a factor in the equation, for sure.
Like we said, it's probably even everywhere. And there's not unlimited spending out there. So, I mean, I think harder choices are going to be made. And, you know, programs are now, you know, going into official visit season with these fixed recruiting budgets.
Yeah.
One SEC program told him they've set aside $7 to $10 million for their 2027 class. And that's not in the top echelon. And so, you know, you go, Florida goes to Texas, beat out Texas Tech for Miller. Mm-hmm. And how they've been putting together classes and spending money. I mean, it tells me it wasn't just about the bag.
Right.
So
And I think Summerall's been pretty upfront and honest about that, saying like, hey, Florida has decent resources, but they aren't unlimited resources. We aren't spending the most in the conference or in the country. And so there is going to be a component about this that is fit, is relationship, yeah, is willingness to play for the logo on the front. You know, money's going to be a part of it, but nobody in this class is going to be here because Florida offered the largest bag. Yeah. Now, they're going to offer good money. Florida is competitive in NIL, and they will continue to be competitive in NIL, but I don't think he wants guys that are only here because it was the largest bag. I think there's some strategy. Not only, you know, there's only so many resources, they're not unlimited for anybody. So not only is that part a factor, but I really think there's some conscious choice in here too, where we want you to want us back.
Yeah, for sure. I think that's gonna go a far part with it in trying to build the early reputation of this roster. And this is the expectation, and this is how we want to, this is the culture we want to build our program around, and we're going to do it early.
Yeah.
So another part of that, on three says quarterback, of course, offensive tackle, edge, and cornerback are still the money positions in recruiting. Multiple players in the 2027 class have already inked deals worth at least $1 million in year one. So you got to ask yourself, you know, only taking 1 or 2 5-star recruits, that's become the reality now.
Yeah. That's what everybody can afford. Yeah, listen, they're playing football in the wrong like time period. This is, could you imagine leaving college, having made a couple $1 million during the time that you were there? He couldn't take $50 for giving a kicking lesson back then. Like the amount of lives that are being changed by this money, hopefully, as long as they're being smart with it, is absolutely mind-blowing to me, even though like this is not new in 2027. We've been doing this for quite a few years at this point, but it still blows my mind.
An SEC staffer told Pete Nekos right here on Villain 3, you can actually pay for 5 or 10 top guys you actually want, and then you're trying to put together the rest of your 18 to 25 person class with the rest of the cash you have. The Big Ten GM said the agent conversations have started earlier, and you're trying to figure out how to allocate time and resources. So I think what we can tell from Florida right now is, all right, our time and resources, we're going offensive line.
We're going offensive line. But that's what we've been begging for years, for literal years. Florida's biggest deficiencies have had to do with their offensive line. Like this is, you know how many Gator fans are like, you know, like that. We've been begging for this. This is how you build a championship team. It starts in the trenches.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think the offensive line recruits, you know, Hiller and Miller, kind of going back to the point, while we're talking money, I think they're betting on Florida's vision. And I don't think it's just a number, you know, and to me, that's a big deal. I mean, like you said, I agree. Look, Florida's NIL was really good. Mm-hmm. Nobody has ever said it's Tech, it's Texas, it's, you know, the bigger schools out there, but Florida's in a good spot.
Yeah, and
they're in a good spot. This is where
maybe not oil money good spot, but
good spot. But yeah, I think it's a big deal how they have chosen to really in this new staff, this new era, this new look of the program, decided, hey, this is how we're going to prioritize building four. Now, look, I don't know if it'll be like this every year.
Sure,
like, puts together a really really good offensive line.
I may not need to do this every year.
Exactly.
I think this is kind of the, you know, and I hate bringing up Miami because I don't like Miami, but like this is kind of the Miami formula, right? Yeah. They have their team last year. That was some of the big focus was their trenches. And you know, not that they don't have good skill players, and obviously they brought in Carson Beck, but they're recruiting, a lot of their budget went to the trenches. And I think we've seen that be successful the last couple of years. And, you know, I'm here for that happening here. We need that at Florida.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. It's breath of fresh air. For one thing, it was funny. I was reading comments, so sorry I missed some of that from you because I was laughing at Stephen Harris here with your Eric.
Yeah, he needs. I mean, could you Could you imagine what all of our lives would have been like when, you know, I think we probably graduated with Eric in debt because of the amount of parking tickets that were accrued over, you know, the amount of time that he was at Florida. Certainly not any like, we're not leaving with any checks. I think maybe when you guys won the national championship, he got paid a few $100 to sign some stuff for Palm Beach Autograph, but that, that was probably it.
Yeah, I mean, it is crazy how it's changed. And look, we were kind of all for it. You know, I think we know what these players have to go through and everything they've missed. And name, image, and likeness. You couldn't even have your own YouTube channel that it was just you. If you were just talking, no matter what, you couldn't make your own. You couldn't make money off what you were doing.
Yeah.
Look, to me, I've always said, I know we're kind of going off a little bit, but NIL to me has never really been the problem. It's NIL paired with the transfer portal.
Yeah.
That's where the issues come in, you know, and making it like an open market and each year is a new year and everybody's going to pay this and that and this and that. No, NIL is fine. But of course we all knew at the time it was opening Pandora's box without any kind of regulations. And there's still not many regulations when it's all said and done with the roster movements. So,
and I think for what it's worth, there's so little ROI on this for 95% of boosters that I actually still don't think this is the sustainable model. Mm-hmm. And you know, we're moving towards rev share. But I still don't know that this is it. I think there will be some caps and some restrictions that come at some point, because again, it's really not sustainable when 95% of all money that's put in is not going to result in a championship. But I've never been against paying players. It's crazy to me that a university could sell their autograph and they make money, but the player doesn't make money. I think some of this is out of control. We got away from like, could we just make it so they could like, you know, afford to live, take their girlfriend out on a date and pay their electric bill while they're playing football and breaking their bodies and all of that, into where it's like, oh, you get a house and you get a house and you, like, we just have jumped so far the opposite way. I'd be okay with reining it back a little bit. And I do think some of that is still coming.
Yeah, I think so. And look, we've seen some good out of it because guys are staying in college longer. So we have stars in college longer, I think.
Listening to the NFL whine about the lack of player availability from rounds 4 through 7 is like music to my ears. Yeah. Like, oh, your free development program isn't sending you people fast enough? Wow.
Yeah.
That's a huge positive. The charity work that these guys get to do, I mean, the foundations that they have created and the good that they have done, none of that was allowed in the previous model. And that's crazy to me too. Like, I was talking to Johnny Townsend about it. He wanted to start his foundation in college and couldn't.
Yeah.
Because it wasn't allowed. And so I do think there's tons of good that has come from this, not just them benefiting financially.
Yeah, I think so too. A couple comments, Allie. I think we can get on with this. Aaron said there should be a limit. Like, Lagway shouldn't have gotten that much. See, that's the difficult part about it. Mm-hmm. There was a lot of the outside NIL away from Florida that made that value a lot higher. Sure.
Yes, absolutely.
You can't know a company out there how much they're willing to pay a player.
That's you're paying market value. Yeah. I do cringe when I see these high school players who have not played on this big stage commanding this money before they get there. Not the least of which is the pressure that it puts on them. And, you know, we're not going to rehash the Lagway stuff, but like, he has mentioned the mental drain that this was on him and the depression. And I just find it hard to believe that he would feel that much pressure if there was no money involved. I think that makes it worse. And so I do think that there's some negatives to that for these young guys.
Yeah, for sure. Now, obviously, you know, there are, you know, the schools are loosely still doing it in the gray area of getting players some more money. But when you're talking about a Lagway situation, you know, it's the Gatorade.
A lot of
it's
that.
The Chipotle, it's the, you know, you can't tell how much those companies they can spend on a player or not.
So, no, and you can't tell a player, hey, don't take that much either. You know, like, you get yours while you can. I'm fine with that. But my issue is more with the adults in the equation.
Yeah. Aaron, we cleared it up a little bit. True day, but Florida should be giving a player a million themselves. That's what I mean. Yeah, I think that's what we all kind of mean. If if it's going to happen outside of it, it's just going to happen outside of it. We can't. Not much we can do about it. Allie, here's, because we were joking about this, me, you, and Shelton this morning, since Shelton's on vacation.
Yeah.
And he said, David, it's about time for your vacation. We need your luck for recruitment. So Allie did have that conversation this morning, and I said, hey, look, maybe this staff doesn't even need my help.
Dave's vacation magic is
maybe we don't need it. Maybe
I'm greedy though. I'll still take the vacation magic, even if the staff is totally good on their own.
Yeah, that's true. Recruiting is never good enough, believe me. No. We can use it for sure. But I mean, look, Phil Whitney, Aaron got a 5-star offensive lineman and a highly rated 4-star offensive lineman. I hadn't even been on vacation yet.
Right. So just imagine what's coming.
Good stuff. Good stuff, everybody. Allie, you want to make some, want to make some picks?
Yeah, let's do it.
Yeah. Before we move on, everybody, of course, this episode of Gator, of the Gator Summit, it's brought to you by Prize Picks. Play $5, get $50 instantly in lineups. So got some NBA up here right now, Allie. So anything catching your eye right now? So, some games are still happening.
Yeah.
Like currently Jason Tatum with 9. But it's less or more 27.5 points.
Ooh, where are we? Quarter two?
Yeah. There's no way he gets that, right?
No. I mean, that's pretty high. So I would maybe take the less on that.
Yeah, let's go. Let's lock that one in before it goes away. And then here we go. Let's go Jokic. And the trend there, he has not hit 30.5 points. So let's go less there. Yeah. I think that gets us. I think that gets us there. Yeah. Look, everybody, that's how easy it is right here on Prize Picks. Oh, I'm trying to redo the entry fee there. It won't let me. There we go. Let's lower that a little bit. So, everybody, look, that's how easy it is. Less, more, accept projection changes, whatever that was. It went down to 20. So look, everybody, look, this is how it happens right here on Prize Picks. Live, it went down to 27.5. Mm-hmm. I still don't think he's getting that. So
I don't either.
Yeah, so there we go. We accept it. We'll submit that lineup. That's how easy it is right there on Prize Picks. It is available in the state of Florida, everybody. So it makes it easy. NBA, MLB, NHL, all these special categories they got for you. Points plus rebounds plus assists. You can build the lineups many, many ways right here on Prize Picks. Play $5, get $50 instantly using code HMA. And look, if you're out there, you think you know ball, well, Prize Picks is the place to go. You got more, less, all these picks.
This is going to be fun during football season when we do all our picks there.
Yeah, I've been teasing a little bit. You know, you can do some NFL futures picks out there.
Yeah.
You know, NFL, go to NFL season, and you got Myles Garrett, you know, his sack numbers, other guys out there, season passing yards, so – if you can't wait for football season, guys, you can go.
A little preview here.
Yeah, a little preview right there at Prize Picks. All right, Allie. So, everybody, if you're watching the YouTube, you can see on the side of the screen, we got a little rundown for you. And in case you missed it, Florida makes CBS Sports top 25 post-spring rankings. And look, we've talked rankings a couple of times since we started this Gator Summit, and it's always the easiest question: should Florida be ranked? Coaching change, a lot of roster change, questions at quarterback, questions at offensive line, two really important positions, a defense that has somehow got to get better, for as long as it has been bad. So, but there still seems to be some early belief in John Summerall. And for us Gator fans and Gator Nation out there, we have felt better a bit since the day he's been hired. We go through spring practice and we see what this team is made up a bit, but now it's kind of leaking out a little bit more of how the process is coming along with John Summerall and all the interviews he's done. And he's talked to almost everybody out there, I think really endeared himself just more than just Gator Nation. I think a lot more people are buying it, but not because of that. I do think they, because of what he showed at Troy and Tulane early on, paired with what we have seen the last few months, you're starting to get a little feel out there that other people are jumping on board with John Summerall and the Gators.
Yeah, and, Vegas agrees, which I feel like that's always the, litmus test. Yeah. Like, we – even last year, we should have learned our lesson, but like we did our, you know, preseason picks and things like that. And we were like, Vegas at 6.5, they're crazy. We're winning 10 games. We're winning whatever. Should have listened to Vegas. would have won some money. I thought it was the easiest money ever picking the more on that. And, you know, for the fact that Vegas adjusted our win total higher after they've seen some of Summerall is incredibly telling, I think. And, you know, obviously CBS jumps on board as well. What was Florida ranked in the CBS poll?
Florida was ranked 23rd. Let me get to it and I'll read the summary as well. I think it was from Brendan Marcello of CBS Sports. Florida does come in at 23rd, one spot behind Clemson and one spot in front of Utah. Utah with a new coach as well, by the way. So John Summerall,
a long time.
John Summerall just wins. He's never won less than 9 games in a season, but that will be challenged in year 1 at Florida. The quarterback battle between Aaron Filo and Tramiel Jones Jr. will continue into the summer, but Filo has the edge because of his familiarity with former Georgia Tech OC Buster Faulkner's system. Jones, however, was impressive in the spring. Summerall will mold the offense and defense around strengths, and the Gators will finally back up a top 25 roster with a top 25 ranking. So that last line will finally back up a top 25 roster.
Shots fired right there.
Yeah, it is, you know, not without mentioning the last staff. Didn't even say anything about the last staff, but lets you know that what they think about this roster, what we've all thought about this roster. Not championship quality, but better than what we've seen. Certainly better than 4-8. nice little summary there, of course. And going back, Allie, to the, you know, we've discussed it before too, the fast starts under John Summerall at Troy, at Tulane, and also never won less than 9 games in a season. So,
which is incredibly impressive.
Yeah.
But he has talked about the fact that, like, you know, when he wasn't rebuilding really at Troy or Tulane, right? Yeah. They were already like decently clicking. And I think this makes this job slightly different because it's not coming in and improving the machine. It's almost rebuilding the machine. I think Florida's headed in the right direction. I think he recognizes that the talent was already here. And that was really never our complaint about the previous staff. We always talked about them out-recruiting their ranking. And so while it wasn't a top 5 class, it was always a better class than we probably should have gotten for where we finished the season the year before. And we stacked those classes one after the other. So again, not necessarily playoff quality roster, but damn sure top 25. And I think with the right coaching, absolutely could play at a playoff caliber roster. And it is nice to see other people realizing that too. And I think it goes back to like, yeah, it was just coaching that was missing. That's it.
Yeah. I mean, so I think also it goes to the quarterback battle, Aaron Filo, Tramiel Jones Jr. Look, I mean, we can beat that horse to death. It's going to be, but
we're going to watch it play out. And we've said on here, we don't care who wins.
No.
We just, you know, we see what we see. We talk about it. I think that it's incredibly close. I don't think we're going to have an answer for a while. But I am comfortable either guy winning the job. Their talent is similar enough in my mind that, like, whoever this coaching staff says is the guy is the guy.
Yeah. It was something that was discussed when this came out on the Gators Breakdown Plus Discord yesterday, and it's asking the question, should Florida be ranked in the way of why should you rank a team, you know, kind of, I guess, preseason rankings or postseason rankings. Like, to me, this being labeled as post-spring kind of gives me the thought that this is a preseason ranking, not necessarily how he
will. Yeah, because what's going to happen between the end of spring and –
yeah, now you could put polls like this together and it's how you think 2026 will end.
Yeah.
And that is a little bit different. Like, I'd have no problem if you start the 2026 season and Florida's not ranked. But if you put the disclaimer, this is how I think the season will end.
And
Florida's ranked, I have no problem with that.
Well, for me, preseason polls are supposed to be based on potential. Right. You know, and
no schedule, you don't have to put the schedule into play or anything like that. You can't penalize a team for a schedule when it hasn't
happened yet. Right. Yeah. You take that schedule into account when you determine your rankings at the end of the year and, hey, this 7-win team played 6 top 25s. This 7-win team played no one. Like, there, that's going to help me in determining my rankings. But I do think preseason is by potential, and Florida has a ton of potential. And that's also why they were ranked in preseason polls in previous years recently, because this team has potential. We will see what these coaches pull out of this roster. And I think it's going to be a lot. I'm ready to be hurt again. I'm drinking the Kool-Aid. I think we're going to see improvement.
Yeah, I think this one, the hurt, I mean, this one might be even more impactful, because I think there's been such a shift in, it's not Lane Kiffin, it's John Summerall. Oh, here we go again, to, all right, forget all that. I'm bought in. I'm ready to go. Yeah. I think a lot of the fan base sits there right now and kind of believe in where this thing goes. And also, they like John Summerall a lot. And, you know, they are kind of just bought in on him.
He's being done such a good job endearing himself to the fan base. But I think everything he's told us so far that we can measure has happened. Yep. And I think that's a big piece of the puzzle. He's not just selling us like sunshine and roses. He's not standing up there saying, just wait until you see us take the field. If you'd been watching what I've been watching in practice, just wait. And I mean, we all lapped that up last year. We did. But
they don't know what I know.
They don't know what I know. We can go back and revisit a lot of those comments. But I feel so much better when you stand up and you tell me like, hey, this, and this were good. This, and this are freaking terrible. And we're going to have to see how that plans out. Like, I can absorb that so much better. Okay, he doesn't think we're a playoff caliber team. He thinks we can win some games as long as the offensive line and, you know, the DB room come along. Like, I can, that all tracks for me. And it makes it easier to buy in and believe him and not feel like you're being sold a load of, you know, fairy tales, essentially.
I agree. Gator Tim says, he says what he means and mean what he says. Mm-hmm. We were lied to for so long before.
And to be fair to Napier, I don't think he ever stood up there and intentionally lied to Florida fans. I think he believed every single thing he was telling us. I just think in hindsight, he was in so far over his head that he didn't know which way was up. And Summerall has even talked about the fact that, like, he had job offers from bigger schools than Tulane when he was at Troy, but he felt like it made sense to make the step to Tulane because it was a bigger job than Troy. And he didn't think he was quite ready to make that major Power Four jump. And that makes so much sense.
Yeah.
You know, Florida's a big job, And Napier thought it made sense to bring his entire staff from Louisiana to the SEC. And I find it hard to believe that there was, you know, 350 staffers, whatever number we brought at Louisiana, that were SEC caliber and they were just diamonds in the rough in Louisiana. Like, that's probably not a realistic thing. And that's, you know, kind of what happened. But I don't think he lied to us. I think he fully believed what he told us. He just wasn't right.
Yeah, he overvalued that part of it. And look, I'm a big proponent. I think I've said this on here before. You got the job at Florida, and this is for any coach making a jump from a lower level to a higher level. You earn that job.
Yeah.
So there is a thought process that is, do what got you there.
Yeah.
But you are afforded,
but adapt or die.
There you go. You are afforded that right.
You are.
But if it doesn't work, you have got to be fat. And it always seemed like Florida was a step behind under Billy Napier.
And game plan. I had a conversation with some people on social media today, you know, through tweets and things about, and, you know, my soapbox is always the wrong number of men being sent out on the field and special teams. And that's where it stemmed from. But like, the fact that we watched that happen for 4 years and it never got corrected is wild. It was wild while it was happening. But now to think back that, like, did we really play more games where we had at least one time we had the wrong number of men on the field than we played games where every play the right number of men were on the field? And I am going to go back and look at these stats at some point, maybe this summer when I have a free second. But I think we had more games where we had at least one play without the correct number of men on the field. And that is... That is absolutely speaks to coaching. That is a procedural penalty that was not corrected for 4 years.
Yeah. And look, I don't think Sumrall went out of his way to do things different than Billy because it didn't work here.
Right. I don't think so either. He just does things different.
He just does things different. Because when I had him on the podcast, and one of the first things when I asked him about, you know, of course there were going to be the comparisons. Mm-hmm. And he was like, look, I've already done things different. You know, when I brought, speaking to your part about the staff, he goes, that was a good example. Like, I went out and got guys that, you know, were at Georgia Tech, were at Kentucky, mm-hmm. guys who had the experience. Yeah. That was a big difference there. You know, I didn't bring a ton of guys with me. Mm-hmm. And so that was one of my biggest questions about Sumrall when he was hired is, what kind of relationships does he have? I honestly didn't know. It was a legit question. It wasn't trying to be a smart ass question. I didn't know what kind of connections he had back to his days at Kentucky.
Sure.
I don't think any of us knew he had a great relationship with Buster Faulkner.
No.
And then he gets hired and they tell the story of how they've been talking for years.
He was going to go to Auburn if he went to Auburn.
Right. So it was just like, there's these things that we just don't know when we're in a coaching search. Or John Sumrall's just don't get me wrong. Early on, I was guilty of it. Oh, do we really want to go there again?
Yeah.
And now the more we learn, the more we've researched, the more he's told us, it was like, okay, he is not the same guy.
No.
It doesn't mean the results are going to be any different. But he certainly is not.
The process is different. And that's true. We don't know that the end result is going to be any different. But it is nice to know that what they're attempting to do to get us there is different, because we do know what didn't work.
Right.
And so that part is refreshing. I also think it's interesting because Napier always came across as incredibly humble. I always pictured him as like a team pastor kind of guy. I think he viewed himself as, I'm going to bring these young people along, players and coaches. I'm going to bring these young people along and help develop them and things. But at the end of the day, there might've been some ego there, and that might've been why he was surrounding himself with people that weren't the same caliber, because nobody questioned him. He got to have all of his yes men. And I think you notice that this is the case when you see the next job that everybody went to. They either went with him to James Madison, or they're like, you know, essentially overqualified GAs at other places. Nobody became some big assistant coach somewhere else. And Sumrall likes to be challenged. Yeah. And, you know, you talk to him and you're like, dude, he is completely confident in himself. Like, he knows, he comes in and he says, like, I know I turn the temperature up in the room. I know I make the room better. So you would think he would have the bigger ego than Napier, but he's not threatened by being surrounded by people who are coordinators at other stops and have strong opinions and long coaching resumes. And that's really impressive. That's when you know you are comfortable in your own skin, is that you want everybody in the room to question so that you all come up with the best possible game plan.
Oh, yeah. It's a breath of fresh air. I mean, I've said it before, but it's different than what we've seen before. And I like the process of the coordinators, what he did. And like, mm-hmm. going back to Buster, like I said, we didn't even know and all that, but Brad White, who he did have a previous relationship with, mm-hmm. you know, date back to the Kentucky days. And I'm eager to see how he, I guess, mixes his defensive philosophy with Brad White's defensive philosophy, because he's a defensive guy. And, you know, he has said, we'll go year by year. Some things have changed, some things have stayed the same. And
which I also like that, because they've made it clear, like, hey, we know what our ideal is, but mm-hmm. it's going to change every single year based on our personnel. And I think we kept hearing like, oh, wait until Billy has his guys, which I do hate that. I remember when my husband went from Zook to Meyer, and mm-hmm. what it feels like to not be labeled as the new coach's guys. You know, I think the second you become a head coach, they are all your guys. So I love to hear that, like, you know, it's going to be different a little bit each year because it depends on the guys we have instead of, well, when I get my pieces in, we'll run my system.
Yep. I mean, I go back to, I loved wide receiver recruiting under Billy Napier. Mm-hmm. I thought that would lead to trying more of an offense that would feature the wide receivers. And it never really did.
Yeah, but we're thankful he brought them in because now we have them.
Exactly. The partner's like, oh, yeah, okay, let's go. So, hey, let's keep it going. And then on that, everybody get some questions in right quick. And we'll get some questions in before we sign off. On that, who's going to be throwing these guys the ball? While I was on CBS looking at the poll, by the way, Texas was number one in the poll. Let me go through the poll right quick, and then we'll get to the other storyline. Texas was number one. Yeah, Florida plays them. Ohio State number two, Oregon number three, Georgia number four. So Florida plays number one and number four. Notre Dame number five, Indiana six, Miami seven, Texas A&M eight, LSU nine, Oklahoma 10. So three in the top 10 for the Gator schedule. Texas Tech 11, they are dropped because of Brendan Sorsby here. That's how updated it is. USC 12, Ole Miss 13, so another Florida opponent this coming up year. Bama 14, Michigan 15, Tennessee 16. They are not on the schedule. Everybody remember that. BYU 17, Iowa 18, Penn State 19, Missouri 20th. So another
one.
Yep, Florida opponent right there. Washington 21, Clemson 22, Florida 23, Utah 24, SMU 25.
So is that five that Florida has?
Yep. So while I was on CBS looking at that, there was the headline that obviously caught my attention because the main picture in the headline is one Aaron Filo. And the headline, seven underrated transfer portal quarterbacks who could shape the 2026 college football season. These under-the-radar transfer quarterbacks may not have the highest ratings, but they are poised to shake up the CFP race. So, obviously, Aaron Filo was on there. The former backup to Haynes King at Georgia Tech reunites with the Yellow Jackets offensive coordinator Buster Faulkner, arguably John Summerall's most important staff addition ahead of his first campaign with the Gators. Filo made the most of his only start at Georgia Tech last season. He's an ideal fit at Faulkner's structured system that involves an out-of-pocket movement from its quarterback. Florida did not name a starter after spring camp. However, following a competitive battle between Filo and Tramiel Jones, Filo received much of the first team reps over the 15 total practices. That's not right. But it was Jones who turned heads during the final spring scrimmage with a better performance. This is a competition we expect to spill into fall camp before Faulkner likely rolls with a player he knows best. So a lot of that's true, but the received most of the first reps was not.
No, they're very evenly split. Yeah. When you say also likely rolls with, I don't understand how you say this is a battle that is going to draw into fall camp before Faulkner likely, if we knew who likely was the candidate, we wouldn't be having this battle going directly into fall, right? Like, right. There's a lot of contradictions in there for me. I think it's accurate that Jones had a great scrimmage. I think it's accurate that it's a battle that's going to happen to the fall. I think that's about all that's accurate.
Yeah. But I mean, good Aaron Filo is on that list. I mean, yeah. I hope he's a quarterback who is shaking up the college football season. If not him, I hope Tramiel Jones is that quarterback.
If it's not one of the two of them, that's probably a problem.
Yeah, because looking at the rest of the list, Caton Hauser from Illinois, Lincoln Kindholz from Louisville, Jaden Craig at TCU, Cutter Bowley, the transfer from Kentucky at Arizona State. I'm going to save one more. I'll go where Filo came from. At Georgia Tech with Alberto Mendoza. And also on the list, everybody, so this is probably, I say, take it with a grain of salt if you don't want to put too much stock in this. One Ashton Daniels at Florida State. So,
well, he could shape the college football landscape because he could get Norvell fired.
That is true. So I just don't see going Stanford and Auburn and it were not working out there to somehow it working out at FSU.
Norvell, the quarterback whisperer.
Man, count his lucky stars for Jordan Travis is all I gotta say.
I'm telling you what.
So there you go, everybody. That's something that caught my eye there as we were looking. So, all right, a few questions. We got some super chats in here. Let's start with right here from Adrian Raps. off topic, I just ordered 6 jerseys, 4 for me, 2 for my son. If Florida goes 8-4, year one, are we happy as a fan base? We damn well should be.
I think so. I mean, the caveat to that is, how did we lose the 4? And are they 4 that we should lose to? I think, you know, year one, you focus on beating the teams you should beat. Yeah. And then after that, you can look at upsetting the teams you maybe shouldn't beat. So if Florida's 4 are, you know, Georgia, Texas, Oklahoma, and let's say Ole Miss or something like that, I think Florida fans are like, all right. And better still, if you're in those games that you lost. But, you know, if it's a different combination of the 4, maybe there's some angst, but I think it overall 8 wins.
Yeah.
Year one.
But the crazy thing about that, Allie, if you say there's a different version of the 4, would that not mean a win over Georgia?
That's true. Or an upset over Texas or something like that. So that's true.
Year ones can be weird, and college football seasons can be weird. Like we can all say 8-4, and the 4 may not go as projected. I mean, there's a lot of times you win games you're not supposed to, and lose games you're not supposed to.
Lose by 1, and it's a fluky thing, and you know there's bad weather or it's freezing or whatever. Like now, do you roll into the Missouri game and just get your butt kicked because it's an 11 a.m. kick or something like that? We're gonna be less forgiving about that. But I do think 8 wins is a start. That would be really good for year one. Nobody's going to be happy with 8 wins in year two.
Yeah.
But it's a huge improvement over 4 wins. That's for sure.
I mean, 8-4 is going to have, with this schedule, we'll have some good wins on it.
Yeah.
So I think that's a way to look at it as well. And I do think if they go 8-4, it probably isn't so chalk. It probably is a win over one of the big 3 teams. In a loss, you'd probably be disappointed with losing. But there's so many ways to break down an 8-4 season, of course, when you play the schedule Florida plays. Some more super comments in here. Gator Jeremy does ask, how's the treehouse coming, Allie?
It's about halfway done. Eric told me today there's 2 hours left. So TBD, I don't really think there's 2 hours left. But I'm also not going to call him a liar.
Adrian Raps one more time earlier. Need 116 more likes. That was a little earlier. So anyway, do your job. Do your job, guys. Everybody out there with the likes. So all right, let me get back to the chat. Let's see. Some questions here.
How did we ever go 4-8? Great question. Great question. You know how many teams we lost to that had a lower talent profile than Florida? A lot.
William Napier.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Gator Tim, is it just me or does it seem like there's exponentially more support and endorsement from former players and staff? Even Urban Meyer seems more involved in Gator Nation.
I think we know why that is, Dave. You and I both interviewed Danny Warfel in January, right after the hire was made. And this is the first time that the Athletic Association has involved former players or coaches in the hiring process. Mm-hmm. And so I think they're more invested. So everybody is more kind of involved in this. You know, Danny was an integral part of the hiring process. He told us both he'd never been asked to do that before. Yeah. And Urban was involved, and Urban had never been asked before. And I don't even know if this is public knowledge. Charlie Strong was involved in helping land some of these assistant coaches. So when you ask for help, a lot of times that comes with support. And I just don't think we've ever gone that route before.
Well, we know we certainly didn't go the route the previous coaching search that way. It was Scott Strickland, Billy Napier. That was it.
Yeah.
That was the only person he wanted to talk to. That was the only person he did talk to. And that was that.
Yeah.
There was no real process to it all. That changed this time. This was a real process. Now we all know the storylines and just rehashing everything that went on. But I think because of that, it did allow them to pivot to somebody that they all liked. Since there was a process, they could bounce ideas off of each other. They could, you know, Danny could talk to Urban if he wanted to. Scott could talk to Danny if he wanted to. I mean, there was a lot more people involved, as you said. So I think
that a lot of people that know this fan base really well. And I do feel like that was a piece to the puzzle. And Strickland would probably tell you that he knows this fan base better today than he knew this fan base the day that he hired Billy Napier. And, I think he's seen some of the success that other coaches have had. He watched Golden. He, you know, and Golden was they used the same search firm to hire Golden that they used to hire Summerall. So I think that he's evolved and learned from some past mistakes, and that's also part of this.
Yeah. Maybe some lessons learned here, Allie, and kind of goes back to what we were talking about earlier. Scott asked, why did it take so long to hire Uncle Phil? I mean, you go back to the last coaching staff. I mean, like it kind of goes back to Napier hiring his friends, hiring so many people he was connected to. And as I said, you are afforded that opportunity. But when it doesn't work out, let's pivot. And he decided to hire two offensive line coaches. And
clearly doesn't watch my Twitter, because I'm pretty sure I've been calling for Phil since like 2020.
That's true. And now, also, when I think you go that two offensive line coach route, or, you know, two major, there's no way Phil's coming for that. And nor should he.
He wants to be that guy.
Yeah.
I don't think somebody asked why did Mullen not hire him. So I think at that point he was at Boston College, and he was probably only in, because I want to say he was at Boston College 18 and 19. I'd have to look it up. But so I don't know that he was experienced enough to become the offensive line coach at Florida yet. He'd been an offensive line coach for like 1 year.
Yeah.
So I think just not great timing.
Yeah, I do think timing was some of it. Uh-huh. You know, I can't put it all on that. Now, when it wasn't working out with Hevesy, maybe you could have got in earlier with Phil. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, even like, at Penn State at 2 years at that point, like right. You probably could have.
Yeah.
Might have been weird for Phil to replace Hevesy, though, who was on the coaching staff when he played. So
yeah.
That might have been, you know, kind of an awkward.
Yeah, it wasn't so cut and dry, I guess. Look at this one, Allie.
Wow, cool invite, guys. Listen, Sheldon, we told you the time and the place, and I like no show, no call,
yeah,
no text. I'm teasing. Yeah. You enjoy your vacation.
Guys, we didn't find out till this morning.
That's true. That is true. Although I'm pretty sure a couple weeks ago he told us something about he was going to not be here for us. Thursday or something. Somebody asked us, do you think Urban hangs around Ohio State like he does UF? I think he's welcome back to Ohio State. I don't think he does it in the same way because he lives here.
Yeah. Yeah. That it obviously I don't see as much Ohio State stuff, but it does seem like there's a little more, a little more around here. So
yeah, I think he loves UF. I think that they've brought him into the fold. I also think when you are one coach removed from being the head coach, it's a little dicey. Does it feel like your old boss is breathing down your neck? Do you feel like you're being judged? He might not be quite removed enough from Ohio State like he is from UF.
All right. I'm certainly glad to have him back around. What, he gets the Ring of Honor this year, right?
Yeah, he gets the Ring of Honor this year. Yeah. I think that's a part of the equation. Somebody asked what awards over the shoulder. I'm on the committee for a high school award here in Tampa. My dad's old high school coach from Jesuit, so that's what that is. This is youth soccer, and Eric Wilbur will tell you this is one of his prized possessions back there. he wins every year, so we're not competitive in this house at all.
Yeah, it got me thinking, Allie. This would be the last thing we talk about before we go. What? I don't think it hasn't been decided which game they're doing the Ring of Honor yet.
I don't think so.
Yeah. So it got me thinking.
Yeah.
It's got to be versus Oklahoma, right?
That would be incredibly fitting. It'll be whatever game they also celebrate the 20 year of the 2020 or the 2006 national championship.
That's a good point, too.
Because all those guys will be back, and it should be against Oklahoma.
Hey,
welcome to Gainesville. You've never been before. Let us celebrate beating your ass.
Yeah, so there's two things there. You're right, the 06 team, so it's 20 years of that. Mm-hmm. So many of those players were still, well, not so many, but a lot of those players were still on the 08 team that beat Oklahoma. Beat Oklahoma in the 08 title game.
Yep.
So, it's got to be that game. Now, I don't know what his Fox contract, if that has any say or anything like that. I'm sure he can take a Saturday off of the Big Noon kickoff.
Yeah.
Because he was in Gainesville for a game last year with the Hall of Fame induction.
Yep.
So
I'm gonna email him and ask him, because I bet they know already. I bet they
gotta be Oklahoma. It's got to be.
If it's not Oklahoma, if you work for the UAA and you are watching this show right now, y'all go back to the drawing board yes. and make it Oklahoma.
Because we're April 30th. Yeah, we got like 4 months, everybody. There's plenty of time. Plenty of time for that. 4 or 5 months. So we can make that happen.
Can you believe we're going to celebrate that? We're going to celebrate the 30 year of the 96 and the 20 year of the 06 this year in the swamp, which I'm really glad that happens, you know, his first year. I think that Summerall will really embrace all that will come with that. There'll be a lot of pageantry. There is some offensive linemen from that 06 team that are still banned from Grog. We tried going at the 10 year we went, they got kicked out again. They specifically said, do not come back for your 20th to some of these players. So
guys, my thing is, come on. We're not 20 year olds anymore. Obviously
Drew Miller was in there with his pregnant wife and lasted like 3 minutes before he was getting escorted out.
Unbelievable. All right. Good stuff, Allie.
This was fun. All right, guys. Thank you so much for joining us. Make sure you're following the Gator Summit on Twitter. Make sure you are subscribed on YouTube. Also, check out Gator's Breakdown, A Peek Inside Gator Football. Make sure you're subscribed to both of those channels and argue with us on social media. It's not Grog anymore, so maybe there's a chance. I thought it was the Grog. I was there last football season at some point. The stairs still stick. So, you know, even if it's a different name, you can still fall down the back stairs. But for Dave Waters, I'm Allie Peek. Have a good weekend, guys. We will see you next week.